Hey guys, I've been trialing some revolutionary new swim tech, and now you can get your hands on it too. This is EO Swim Better, a swimming evolution in the palm of your hands. Improve your technique with EO Swim Better.
Analyze your stroke technique with EO's Swim Better handset. Go to eolab.com, use code Brett at checkout and save 10%. We individualize training in the pool, so why not individualize your nutrition? Erica Biney of Biney Wellness Building will help you and your swimmers get exactly what each athlete needs through genetic testing and personalized nutrition plans. So stop guessing what you should and shouldn't be putting into your body. Athletes within a few weeks have noticed they're recovering faster because they're fueling their body with what they need and staying away from what their body hates. Erica understands swimming. She gets it. She's worked with over 20 Olympians, including the fastest man in the world, Caleb Dressel. Group discounts are available, so go to Biney Wellness Building and get in touch with Erica today. That's Biney, B-E-I-N-E, wellnessbuilding.net. We're on, mate. Marius Kush, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, man. Where are you based these days?
Right now, I'm back in Charlotte, kind of full circle. I started out at Queens. I moved back last year in October. So full circle, we're back at it.
Awesome, man. Good stuff. I see you doing a lot of cool things on Instagram. I like the way that your kind of brain is thinking and where you're going with things. And tell me about kind of where that started for you.
Well, I would say I probably started around September, October of 2022. I think it's one of those things where if you ask an athlete, do you think it's better if you present yourself well on social media, if you have certain things that you kind of show about yourself, whether that's your training, your mindset, you do the marketing yourself. If I was asking any athlete, do you think it would be beneficial for you to have that? I think most of the athletes would agree yes, but it's one of those things everyone knows you should be doing it probably, but there's not a lot of people willing to do it. I would say the one that's probably, if we talk about a professional level, the one that I think does it best right now is definitely Michael Andrew. He's been doing that for a while, just constantly marketing himself. I think it's very necessary. I don't think it's good enough if you just swim a fast lap and then think all these things should be handed to you. I think it's also your responsibility to put your name out there. And
I'd agree, man. I mean, obviously, I've leaned very heavily into a brand right now that people are starting to connect with, and I see that for people like you and Michael Andrew doing similar things in terms of kind of leaning into even the education and the access and awareness and just trying to get people to understand simply how to do things in the pool, right? Like you're giving instruction and breaking it down very well. But I like the fact that you're building this brand about yourself as well. And I think every athlete has that potential to do that now, don't they?
I 100% think so. I have been trying to push that amongst my friends so that some of them would start posting more regularly. One of my really, really good friends is also killing it right now, Brent Hayden. We've been talking about that a lot. And I remember when we first started, I would say we had a pretty similar reach on our social media. And we were kind of holding each other accountable to post because it's like one of those things like training. You have to show up every single day. If you are trying to be active once or twice a week, you're not going to see a result at all. But he's also doing very, very well, grew his audience a ton. I think it's very key. I think it's necessary that more people do that because especially when it comes to swimming, we always talk about swimming not being one of the more popular sports. And I do think that also us athletes, coaches, whatever, we have that responsibility to also push that sport. Again, I am not a big fan of thinking that something should just be handed to you. There's no one's going to come and save you. You have to actively show up and get your name out there.
Yeah. What are some of the strategies in terms of the things that you've wanted to put out there? What are you thinking that you feel like your audience really connects with?
I would say so. I like the community thought a lot. Looking back at it, I wish growing up I could have been part of a community where, you know, you're around like-minded people who really enjoy swimming, not necessarily having to push it to a professional level, but just sharing the love for that. And so what I try to do is I try to work with my audience a bit more, asking what they're interested in. Obviously, it should be a healthy mix. I enjoy sharing certain things that I think are key things that help me get to the level where I am. But then I also really like to work off the feedback. And a lot of these things boil down to technique. I think especially now, everyone is eager to learn online and on their own terms. Right. So especially when it comes to swimming, there is not that many outlets where you can just go and watch high-level athletes just showcase technique exercises, other than if you were to going to attend a clinic. But I do think technique work is something that works really well for me. And I usually like sharing little bits about my private life too. I love golfing. I sometimes share that. Mm. But I would say I really go off the audience too. I think that's important.
Yeah. Now, you and I have spoken, you know, privately about kind of the shifts in your training and the ideas and the way that you're kind of getting the best out of yourself these days. What are some of the, as you've aged up and you've got experience and you've been on the world level for a while now, what are some of the things that you're doing in your training that has evolved and has put you in a place where you feel like you're able to swim faster or better times at an older age?
I would say a lot of the things going back to just really increasing the quality of the work, especially with my background. I grew up in Germany. I swam in Germany for a while, made my first junior European team there. So I got my base in Germany, and that base was always very yardage heavy, a lot of swimming, lots of aerobic training. And I would say something that I now really put into a focus is more of that fast swimming. We try to really push speed that you would also reach in your races. That is something that I'm doing more often. And then also trying to do these efforts with a real good technique. I think this is something that as an athlete, you also naturally kind of shift into, just because if you decrease the amount of reps that you do, then that quality really has to be outstanding. Because if we're talking about, let's say we did a session today, where we were doing 15 meter sprints, just really trying to focus on that top level speed, trying to increase that. If I do these few efforts that I have and I just descend the efforts, or I'm not pushing as fast as I can right away, then I'm just really wasting my time. So I would say this is something that I learned along the way, that as you progress in your career, you can definitely decrease the volume a lot more because you do have that base, but that quality is something definitely that is incredibly important, that right now I would say is probably my biggest focus.
When we talk about base, let's talk about this a little bit. Base to me seems to always be swimming long, right? Swimming far, but generally it's done with fairly poor technique compared to the technique that you and I are used to when we're swimming very fast and we're trying to compete. So to me, there's an imbalance between the way that we train to swim and the way that we perform, right? There's this imbalance there. So when it comes to this volume of work that we speak of, do you think there is there should be a shift in the way that we accumulate this work, compile this work, where at a younger age, the quality of the work can be higher and the yardage can come down for kids, you know, instead of having to do this base of just kind of really poor technique?
I mean, I agree with you. That's pretty much what I've been going through when we speak about a younger age in my career. This goes back to where I grew up swimming. But still back in Germany, I would say most of the thinking is still always based on that volume, that there's this magical number X that you're supposed to hit, or being asked, what do you think is the perfect amount of volume you should do? I would say a lot of conversations I have usually start the same. They usually go around, how much did you swim this week? What was the total yardage? And honestly, so I'm training with Coach Elliot Potasnik right now. He used to be a coach at Hawaii, good, really good sprint coach. And we had this conversation because he's also someone trying to learn giving presentations to other coaches. And especially when he gives presentations in other countries, so for example, Germany, a lot of the times, one of the most common questions is, so how much did you swim this week? And this is also something that I would say I experienced pretty much up until my career now, where I have these conversations. It's one of the first questions. And if that number doesn't match their expectation or someone's expectation about what base should look like, then a lot of times you get this silly guy type of response. I do think, especially with that, the base doesn't have to be incredibly high and swim with very poor technique. I'm not a big believer in swimming tons and tons of yardage in poor technique. It's just creating very, very bad habits that ultimately it's incredibly hard to get out of your stroke. Do I believe there should be a certain level of base? Yes, absolutely. But I do believe that the quality of work is really important.
Right.
It has to be a healthy balance. But I would say, if I'm looking back at my own career, the biggest jump I made was when I really started focusing on that technique, on that quality of work, started introducing speed rather than just swimming everything in that, aerobic department.
Right, right. Now, you're also primarily a butterfly. I regard you as a butterfly, I would say. In regards to technique and speed that relates to your race, right? Like a 100 butterfly, how would you train these days? Well, in terms of the type of efforts you would do to train for butterfly and build endurance, let's just stick to endurance first of all. How would you build endurance in butterfly that would relate to the type of endurance you need for a really fast 100 butterfly?
Well, I do think there's different components to it. So I don't really believe in a one size fits all. I've seen many, many different level butterflies. So if we go back to a younger age, when I started swimming and started slowly getting faster and faster, I remember we had guys swimming sessions of 5 rounds of 400 butterflies on long course, holding a certain time on 5 minutes, 5:30, which is impossible for me to do. I don't like to use that word impossible, but when it comes to this, just absolute poor technique. We always call it the whale fish technique. We just go up and down and go into that pure survival mode, which again, that does not translate into the swimming at all. Right. For me, what has always worked best is if I work my butterfly endurance training 50s or 25s on repeat. 50s, something where we would try, I think what's really beneficial as a butterfly too, is if you have your stroke count matched with a certain amount of time, just so that it's actually applicable to your race. If I train sloppy butterfly and a speed that I would never really use, I just believe that's wasted yardage. I don't like to train slow, sloppy butterfly at all. We try to avoid that at any cost. But I would say 50s, always with a certain purpose, 25s with a certain purpose on shorter intervals. That is something how I like working my butterfly base. I also think that equipment is really important. We've been swimming a lot with fins, for example. It allows you to have a little snappier kick. Obviously, your hips naturally stay a little bit higher, but I do believe that there's a big advantage to also using equipment. And then I'd say the last trick that we would also do is, I'm by no means a breaststroker. That's my, we like to say, fourth best stroke. But I would sometimes even join breaststroke group sessions where we would specifically focus on certain components that are also applicable to butterfly. If you talk about that breath in the beginning, that shorter, quicker breath, if you talk about the higher ball catch position, and then rather than doing a breaststroke kick, we would just do a butterfly kick. So if I feel like my butterfly is really breaking down and I can't even hold it with within 50s and fins, then we would transition into something like that. And you can always play around with intervals, intensities. But long story short, I always try to avoid sloppy butterfly swimming.
I like that. And I believe in very similar things. And one of my biggest influences was Richard Quick. And Richard Quick passed away in 2009. He was the head coach at Stanford University. And I think he was the first person that really showed me that fast butterfly should be trained fast. You know, like I was always of the opinion that you needed to build endurance in butterfly by doing hundreds and 200s, just based on the influences that I had in my life growing up, right? Like I always just thought that's how you built endurance, because butterflies are very challenging stroke, right? To maintain and hold, especially as you fatigue. You know, you go from this flat body position, all of a sudden you start swimming vertical, you know, like that. My coach would always tell me the piano fell from the sky and landed on my back, you know, and it's all of a sudden you're dragging this thing. So I was always of the opinion that you had to train hard
by doing hundreds and 200s. And then Richard always came in and said, no, it's about training fast and doing repeats of fast fly over and over again. He was very much the same philosophy, 25s and 50s only, right? And he went on to have Misty Hyman, who won the gold medal in the 200 butterfly in 2000, and had multiple butterflies. You know, he had tons of them. So, yeah, that was his philosophy too. It was fascinating to me. And then once I started to adopt that philosophy, all my butterflies started to drop time. All of them started to swim fast. All of them started to have top end speed, front end speed, and back end speed the way they needed it to apply to their race. And look, we are specifically talking about 100 butterfly here, but it certainly relates to a 200 fly. I mean, if you train 50s at pace over and over again, you can have a fantastic 200 butterfly based on that type of training.
I do agree with you. I think especially when it comes to butterfly or also breaststroke, since it's a rhythmic based stroke and you really benefit from like a very high hip position in the water, not that that's not important for any stroke, but I would say specifically speaking for fly and breast, if you really sit high on top of the water, you just can swim so much more efficient. And especially that last bit of the race is key. I don't necessarily, when we look at races, always want to jump to the conclusion that, well, you did not survive the last 25, you did not survive the last 15. Therefore, we have to train a little bit more. We have to increase the volume. We have to do that. That was one of the things that would probably drive me crazy. Because a lot of the times this goes back to technique. Again, I'm a very big believer in good technique. That was the theme of my whole career. Again, there's an aspect to it too, where you have to work hard and you have to get the work done. The work needs doing, yes. But when it comes to this stroke specifically, if we train a lot in these lower tempos and this lower speed, then you just create these bad habits where you swim with an arched back, you drag through the water, you're not in that downhill position, rather, as you mentioned, in that uphill position. And just by doing these slower reps over and over and over again, you're teaching yourself bad habits. So what we would do is we just completely eliminate that, and then either swim other strokes, we would use equipment to help there, or again, when we swim butterfly, we just really focus on shorter distances where I can actually execute that proper technique. And for me, that was when I saw that translation into my races. I spend a lot of time off doing very long, tedious sets, which, again, maybe when you're younger, it's okay to do those, but there needs to be a time and point where you transition and where you start becoming more mindful about that technique, because that's ultimately what yields you that really big result.
Let me question you on that. I was going to ask something else until you said that statement and it bothered me, right? Like you said, maybe when you're younger, that might be okay. Why is it? Why is it that we always revert back to, well, it's okay if you're younger? I don't fully understand that, you know?
I don't necessarily agree with that 100% either. I think at a certain level, again, it's more about actually developing the stroke, creating a certain base. But again, I do not believe that at age whatever, you have to swim volume, you have to swim a certain amount of volume until this age and completely avoid technique. We're just cramping in yards. We're just going as far as we can with a sloppy technique. And then, I don't know, you reach age 16, age 17, and now finally you unlock that technique aspect, which, again, I think that's too late. Also, I would say there's a lot of things within that technique development actually. So if I'm looking back how I grew up, nowadays I'm looking at a lot of 50 freestyle, and you see straight arm, you see different variations. A lot of these things I never even learned. I learned that classic catch up freestyle with that elbow where you wait and then you switch. But that straight arm freestyle sprinting is something I never learned. I think, again, that's definitely something you should also start learning from a younger age, different techniques, and not thinking that, okay, this is a sprint specific stroke. We're just not going to touch it. We're just going to wait until you're a little bit older. I don't believe in that either.
Let me ask you this. What do you do in your recovery? How do you recover and fly these days? Because I know that has changed, and you're of this new age type butterfly that is about swimming fast and effectively. So what are you doing in your recovery?
Are you talking specifically about the recovery stroke within butterfly?
Yeah. Yeah, because fly was always kind of like this up and down movement. It seems to have flattened out. So in terms of what you're specifically trying to do in your recovery. Talk to me about your recovery and your fly.
So I would say the biggest advice I have there, or something that has just worked for very well for me, is I just think about throwing my hands. So I usually work with cues, certain words, when I just say throw hands. That's usually for me when I know, okay, instead of actually bringing my arm around, being very tense, kind of like when you initiate that pull, you start out with that high ball catch position, you really apply that pressure to move forward, to hold a lot of water. On my recovery phase, I would mostly say I am really focused on my hands. I am just trying to exit the water kind of quick with a little flick motion almost. And then I use that speed, throw my hand forward, and that allows me to get into that next stroke. I would say that up and down butterfly was something that I had to get out of my actual technique. It took me forever to get rid of that. What we moved into gradually was more of a skipping stone type of butterfly. When I first came to Charlotte in 2016, I trained with Coach Marsh also and Team Elite, and we had a butterfly, Tim Phillips, who was a really, really fast butterfly. And I remember watching his stroke, and it literally reminded me of when I was a kid. And you go to a lake, you grab one of these stones and skip him over the water. And that stone would just never pass. It would just keep going over the water. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that. You can pair that with a lower breath to where you're actually not lifting your body so much, which then also, you know, sometimes gets your hips to drop. You just really try to flatten out that stroke to just move forward. Ideally, we always said that you want that pool to be shifted downwards. Obviously, that's not possible, but that's the type of thinking that we would have. And then just really with every single stroke, try to skip over that water rather than having that more economic stroke. Again, there's a lot of very different styles. That is just the one that has worked best for me. I would say that's how I can transfer my speed, my power the best. When we talk about a 200 butterfly, you obviously have to soften that. But I would say that type of swimming, that more aggressive, flatter butterfly stroke, has been something that really yielded me great results.
Yeah. Now, a lot of times when I see people make mistakes and want improvement in either their fly or their freestyle, for instance, I see them grabbing and snatching at the water, right? Like they come over, and because they're aggressive under the water, they keep that aggression on top. And so they keep that same tension. So it's tension underneath. They come over with tension, and they end up grabbing and snatching at the water, I call it, right? And so I see a lot of times an athlete will chop in on their fly, chop in, kind of come in on their hands, and then have to align themselves to get onto the catch, but they're snatching and chopping. So I would imagine with what you're doing is there's pressure and tension underneath your body. You're coming and you're snapping off your hip, but there's a sense of relaxation in your recovery as well until you land in the spot where you want to land back onto your catch. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that's very key, especially again in when we talk about swimming butterfly. I usually try to really emphasize that first initial impulse when my arms are fully in front of me, fully straight in front of me. That's when I focus on pressure on my hands, high elbow catch position, just really accelerating in that first little bit of my stroke. And then as my elbows come closer and closer back to where my hips are, that's where I focus more on a snap of my hand position. That's where pretty much the work, that pull has been done. And then all I am working on is just working on that smooth recovery. Because if you swim 100 butterfly long course and you're just chopping through it and you're swimming very mechanically, that is the fastest way to start fatiguing. The way how I like to see it is I always want to work with the water, never against the water. If I'm chopping into the water, if I'm splashing into the water, you just create a lot of drag. You create a lot of inefficiencies, and that's a fight you're going to lose every single day of the week. So we always try to focus on being more efficient, being more mindful. And again, especially when it comes to recovery phase, I don't think you necessarily have to overcomplicate it. If I think about, I just throw my hands forward, that naturally gets me to actually relax my arm, my traps, so that I can actually set up for my next stroke and then, go into a quicker turnover.
Yeah. Before I move on to the dolphin kick, one of the most common butterfly drills that I see done around the country, around the world, actually, that I actually avoid completely. I despise this drill, but it is the number one drill that I see around the world. What do you think it is for butterfly?
There's a lot that comes
to
mind.
You see it everywhere. If somebody says, go do butterfly drill, what do they automatically go to?
Maybe single arm butterfly.
Single arm butterfly. Thank you. Single arm fly. I hate single arm fly. Please, can we take this out of drilling and skill improvement when it comes to young kids? Because all they end up doing is just chopping in and doing this undulated fly. It doesn't relate to what you're trying to do at all these days, right?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. So I've also started to coach a bit more on the weekends sometimes. I do really enjoy the coaching aspect too, because in a way it keeps my own mind, my own technique fresh. I'm constantly rehearsing these things. And then when I go into my regular training routine, a lot of the times just by me explaining that, talking about it, I can actually tell that my technique feels way sharper. And so one of the drills for example, when I'm teaching butterfly, there are certain aspects that I like about single arm butterfly, but there's also a lot that I really don't like. Something that I really don't like about these single arm butterfly drill is when we have kids, if we talk about younger athletes, breathe forward. I think that is one of the worst things, because every single time you see their hips just drop every time. So you get into this habit of entering with your hand, going up and down. The hips are dropping every single time. So when I do this drill, for example, I like to either breathe to my side or I like to do a snorkel. What is key there again is that body awareness of actually engaging your core. If you do not engage your core and you have that moment of lifting your head and not pairing that with an engaged core, rotating your hips under, you have exactly that problem that you sink. And especially when you're a little bit younger, not everyone has that body awareness. Not everyone has that core strength yet. So that is a drill that I don't like. The second problem that you already mentioned is, again, that sloppy entry and that swimming up and down butterfly, which, again, it's terrible. I do not like to see that drill at all. The thing that I do like about a single arm butterfly, when you take out that breathing aspect and if you can manage to keep your hips high, is just teaching yourself the rhythm, introducing the kick when your hand lands in front, in the back. Obviously, there's other drills that you can do, but I would say those two things are something that I, now that I sometimes coach as well, see over and over, and I like to avoid that too.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking to a high-level Olympic butterfly here, you know, and you get it. So when you're teaching it, you can out-teach the mistakes and the things that you're trying to avoid. I think what I find is that there are a lot of coaches that don't have your awareness when it comes to butterfly and maybe can't teach it as well. So it's just being taught as very sloppy. It's a very sloppy drill that's being taught. And it's a go-to. It's an easy, you know, it's just a give me single arm fly because it's like easy, right? But I think there's so many mistakes that come with it. And if it's not taught correctly, like you are, which I think is fantastic, then I try and avoid it completely, right? So in terms of some other drills that you like to incorporate into your flow, into how you would teach butterfly, have you got two or three that are a go-to for you?
So I would say when I look at butterfly and when I look at the athletes that I would usually coach, what they're struggling with the most, a lot of times it's the rhythm and then it's also the breath. I would say these two things are something that create a lot of other problems. Again, we can look into, we can get very specific and look into all these little problems. But I kind of like to look at the root problem, the core problem. What is it that first doesn't work out? And then from there, other things start falling apart. So I think one of those things is, for example, the breath. See a lot of athletes who, when we always refer to a low breath, keeping your chin as close to the water as possible, surfing over that surface. If you look at strokes, for example, of Michael Phelps, I really enjoyed watching Milorad Čavić. It's that very, very low chin position where you just surf over the surface. And again, that also helps you to minimize that up and down position. What I like to do there, I call this, we call it penguin drill. There's probably hundreds of names for this, but I usually like to just be in a streamlined position. I have my hands in front. I scull in and out a couple of times. And then once I initiate that pull, that's when I slightly lift my head. But what I always try to focus on, instead of having my head completely faced forward, which I think it's easier for my hips to drop, I like to keep, if you look from the side, I like to keep a slight tilt to where when I swim butterfly, I don't even see what's in front of me. My head is shifted down And because of that, that allows me to stay very, very close to the surface and just keep moving forward. That is something that works incredibly well for me. That is something that I would say I learned at Queens. I learned with Coach John Long, David Marsh. That was really good. When it comes to rhythm work, again, I do like using a single arm butterfly if you want to work on your rhythm for that. If you can manage on not letting the other things happen that we just talked about. I would say those are drills, for example, that are really important. But especially when you learn that, I would usually say I start with establishing a good body position, a good body line, because it's a lot easier to swim proper butterfly when you sit higher on the water, and you can also apply that for any other stroke. And then I would probably focus on my breath and my rhythm. The rest, increasing the strength of your pull, increasing the snappiness of your kick, those are things that you naturally progress into. But I would say those are very important. And to actually add on, I would say the last thing that's also really crucial in butterfly is establishing that high elbow catch position. High elbow catch is something I would say everyone has heard a million times. But even when you ask athletes, hey, what do you think you just did on that repetition? Did you have a high elbow? Oh, yeah, I did. And then you look at it and that elbow was actually dropped. So building that awareness of body position, rhythm and timing, I would say those are things. If you can master those early on, then going down the other avenues and really specifying butterfly, you're going to have a much easier time.
Former swimmers looking for a way to give back to the sport in New York City, reach out to Imagine Swimming. Since 2002, they've been the premier learn to swim school with international and American staff, including Olympic champions Anthony Irvin and Eric Vint. Imagine Swimming offers infant to adult classes, plus competitive team options, water polo, and an artistic swimming club coached by an Olympic silver medalist. With flagship locations across Manhattan and Brooklyn, Imagine is always looking for the next generation of swimmers to pass on their knowledge and passion for swimming.
Tired of settling for less than the best with your team's dryland program? Swimstrong Dryland is the answer you've been looking for. With world-class dryland programming for every age group, customized to fit your team's needs, nutritional coaching and education centered on the latest evidence-based research, leadership training and character development to promote an athlete-driven culture, sports psychology education and mental skills training, coaches' corners to promote collaboration, data-driven performance analysis, and an unrivaled family of athletes, coaches, and teams, fast swimming starts here.
In freestyle, we do want to hold water, obviously, and the best way to do that is to kind of get that high elbow catch, like you said. But as we're seeing in straight arm freestyle now, underneath their body, they're very straight as well. So they're keeping the elbow locked in, but they're holding water in this region here. Can you swim fly with a straighter arm other than having to get kind of a high elbow like a 200 fly? Are people now kind of digging in and keeping more of that straight arm like they would in freestyle, but doing it for butterfly or not?
I would say so to a degree. Obviously, it's not going to match exactly how you would execute that 50 freestyle straight arm. I think it also really has to do with how strong you are. How this goes back to what we talked about earlier. If you're someone and you do not train these high speed efforts, 15s, 25s, where you actually, you maybe even throw some resistance on there, some fins, paddles, if you want to use a parachute, whatever. Something that is really, really hard is when you enter the water and then immediately applying that pressure rather than having your arm drop, and then apply pressure. I would say this is probably more applicable for sprint butterfly if we look at a 50, but specifically in a 50 butterfly too. So I've been training with Andriy Govorov for a while. He's been out here at Queens, which was a pleasure to train with him. Very, very mindful athlete. I consider myself a mindful athlete, but when I hear him talk about stroke and we have these nerdy technique conversations, which I personally love, it's really nice seeing how well connected he is with his actual stroke and the way how he moves through the water. But even there, we also talk about that catch position. You don't need that 90 degree catch position. You can definitely flatten that out a bit more. But again, it comes down to, are you able to execute that and hold that water? Because by also straightening that arm, you do have a lot more pressure on that arm. It's a lot more force. You can create more force, but you also have to push that water down. And I think that goes back to, you do have to do that in training. You can't just magically change your technique to a straight arm fly and hope you can execute it. All of that goes back to, are you actually putting that work in training? Are you practicing it? Or do you just fantasize about executing that technique at your big race?
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, once you catch this water, I see a lot of the top butterflies in the world kind of come here and like line their hands up right in front of their shoulders. So, you know, not outside the shoulder line and not inside the shoulder line. It's kind of like right on the shoulder line. They're catching the water here. Now, as they're pulling the water in, are you bringing your hands in still close to your midline, your belly button, and then sliding out and finishing out back? What are your hands doing underneath?
I would, when I sprint butterfly, I definitely bring my hands closer into my body. I'm not bringing my hands down to where my hands are actually touching under my stomach. Mm-hmm. I also, mm-hmm. again, I don't like that really, really wide reach. For me, I like to move through the water as natural as possible. So what that means is I like to kind of enter in that shoulder width stroke where I can, when I land, I can directly go into that catch position. If you're someone and you enter very, very narrow, then you now have to actually bring your arms out and then go into that mm-hmm. catch position, where I think that's, especially when we talk about sprint, that's very valuable time that you lose, where you could have gotten into your stroke quicker. I would say I probably still somewhat pull under my stomach, get my hands closer together, but they're not touching, mm-hmm. and it's also not super wide. It's something that I personally played around with a lot, and I just tried to feel, again, we're talking about more high level swimming, I just try to feel what's more natural to me. But I would say I don't like going completely under the stomach, but I also don't want those hands to be way too wide to where we actually again create drag and we're not moving efficiently through the water.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the dolphin kick. I think it's one of the most complex things to teach and work on. In terms of maybe some common mistakes, first of all, that you see, and then how would we correct those most common mistakes? To me, the two biggest things I see is obviously a very heavy down kick and a light up kick. So it's like boom, boom, you know, it's kind of like a one, like we're beating on a drum, you know, so we put a lot of emphasis on the down kick, not much on the up kick. But then also a lot of younger kids will pull up too high, so their feet will actually come out of the water and get a lot of bend. Are you seeing the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. So I would say underwater kicking, that is by far my biggest passion about swimming. I have always, I don't know why, but I've always been very fascinated with underwater dolphin kicking. That is definitely something that I see happening a lot. I would say the most common mistakes are, again, we're kicking, that down kick is very, very heavily exposed and there's almost no up kick. I also do think when it comes to butterfly kicking itself, I see a lot of athletes have that very heavy leg separation where those legs are actually kind of closer together. If you think about a dolphin, you see that big center fin with the other fin attached. They're not designed in a way where actually you have these two fins flopping around. And the same thing I would like to think about my legs. If I have my legs too far separated and I have that little bit of a gap, I'm not able to create these vortices that I can actually feel rolling down my shins, rolling down my legs. If I keep my legs relatively close together, I keep my feet relatively close together, and I'm focusing on that down and up kick, then again, these vortices, I can actually feel how I create them. It's almost like a wave that starts from my hip and is rolling down over my quads, my shins, and then all the way down my feet. But definitely the up kick is, I would say, the biggest weakness for most athletes. Very, very down kick heavy. I would say 80-90% down kick, almost no up kick. Especially on that up kick, if we pull from our heel rather than using our foot almost as a scoop where you scoop up the water, those are probably the most common mistakes I see.
Yeah, so you're talking about obviously holding water on the top of your foot on the down kick, but then holding water on the back of your foot as well, which we don't often associate too much, right? So like we think of like holding water down, but we don't think about holding water up, do we? So when you bring your legs back up and you want to, do you curl your toes? Do you are you putting emphasis on your hamstring? Like how are you pulling water back up into that up kick?
So I would say it's a combination of I engage my glutes, my hamstrings, and then I also specifically, I think about my toes. I think about curling my toes and wanting to use my foot almost like a scoop to scoop up that water. I would say the easiest thing that that you can feel as an athlete when you're in the water is I always like to feel the pressure of the water on the top of my foot and on the bottom of my feet. When I'm kicking and all I feel is that pressure on that top of my foot, I know there's virtually no up kick at all. So again, what I try to do is really use my foot, scoop up the water. And then another thing that I have been working on a lot and with coach John Long back in Indiana, keeping a straighter leg. I think sometimes we have a very, very aggressive angle in our knee, almost 90 degrees or more, where you actually, you're knee kicking heavier. You're using your thighs to actually kick. And that's one of the bigger muscles in our body that fatigue pretty quick. So instead of doing that, as weird as this sounds, but sometimes I watch dolphins or think about how are dolphins or fish moving through the water. And again, they're not designed in a way where that fin is bending massively. That fin is staying relatively straight. And so we've been incorporating that into our training. And just by having a straighter leg, that means for me now I have to engage my core more, but I can also really use my upper body, my core, to push and pull on that down and up kick and give my legs some rest. I actually this morning just talked to someone about this, gave that person some feedback, and that feedback was right away. If that person would usually get out of the walls in their races after their third, fourth wall, that the legs would fatigue really quick. And again, I think that's one of the reasons when we're kicking that we're using our legs very heavily in that kick rather than having a straighter body and letting that wave roll through our body. It's like if you think about a towel, if you take that towel, you throw it, and then you just let it kind of come back. There's no power. That's that same thing if you kick down, but you don't have that up kick. I like to think about it as the change of motion. I'm kicking down, and then as my down kick finishes, I now want to quickly flick my feet up. That's when you take that towel and you get that quick flick, that sound that you hear. That's raw power, and that's how I think about my underwaters. So I don't think it's so much about actually pressing down your legs or pulling up your legs. I also think that change in motion on the top and on the bottom of your kick is something that's really important. It creates that snap, which I think is more efficient, and I have to use less energy to constantly move quick through the water.
Yeah. One of the things I found too is like you talk about, you know, being quad heavy at the dolphin kick. Obviously, you know, a lot of the power and the drive is going to come from the quads, but I find if you emphasize the movement from the quad, like you said, you can fatigue very quickly, and then also you get into that action of like pulling up too high, you know, underneath the knee, bringing the legs up too high. So for me, the reference point is generally I like to go back to the hips and just make the hips flowing and moving. So if the hips are constantly flowing and moving, then everything at the back is going to, you know, be with that and moving with it and flowing. So a lot of the time when I'm talking to my butterflies about either dolphin kicking or even butterfly flow, it's just constantly moving the hips. Is that correct?
Yes. If we're looking at good, fast underwater kicking, you barely ever see someone with a stiff hip. If that hip is really stiff and there's no movement, what that tells me is there's no power generated from your sternum, from your chest, that creates that wave rolling down through your body. Rather, if you're not engaging your hips, if you don't see a lot of hip movement, again, that usually results in a more knee-heavy kick, where we just kind of use our knees up and down, which, again, is super slow, less inefficient, and just not that technique that we're looking for. Underwaters, I think in order to really master those, you really have to understand also how your core factors into that. Starting from your upper body, we've been seeing transition in underwater kicking. If you look at Jordan Crooks, if you look at Caleb Dressel, you really see how that upper body is engaged, how the hips are moving up and down, and that creates that whip-like motion. We're not so much in that era where we have a more shallow knee kicking, heavier kick, but we're actually starting to engage that core and really use that strength. I do think you have to play around with it. But if I look at myself, for example, I also really benefit from engaging my core, moving my hips a lot. And again, you can really work on pushing and pulling your upper body. And naturally, when you do that, your hips will follow. And that allows me to kind of move faster throughout the race. But I would say it also something that factors in heavily is your upper body mobility and flexibility. How flexible are you? Are you someone you can barely streamline? You're so stiff. Well, then we have to work on opening up your upper body. We need to work on thoracic spine mobility, which is essential for underwater kicking. A lot of these things you know, they don't happen overnight, but a lot of stretching, a lot of other things outside of the water are necessary in order to have that good underwater kick. And then I would say probably the most important thing, which it sounds redundant, but if you're not practicing doing underwaters every single day in practice, if you don't have a certain kick count, if you do a technique session once, but every single practice you push off the wall, you don't think about it, you do one or two kicks, you're not going to improve. I would say the person where I learned that from was Tom Shields. Tom Shields gave me very valuable insights in underwater kicking. And I do believe he's one of the fastest people ever underwater. He also figured out how to consistently keep that tempo, because it's one thing knowing how to go fast, but it's another thing of being able to consistently translate that where you can hit 15 meters on your third, on your fourth, on your fifth wall. So those are all things that really factor in. But definitely range of motion with your upper body. That is something that is very, very key for underwaters.
Listen, man, I really like combat sports. And you know, I think about sports like jiu-jitsu, right? And if I wanted to learn jiu-jitsu, I'm going to go and sit with somebody that has a black belt, right? Like, I'm going to go and learn from somebody that has a black belt. And I know that in these combat sports, they go beyond that. They go up to these master levels. To me, you're the master level of butterfly. Like, if I was going to learn from somebody, I'd want to come to you and learn from you. And I know that you're putting out incredible stuff on Instagram and other places where people can access your knowledge. But I just think you've got so much to teach, and you can change the world, man. The way that you think about butterfly and the time and energy that you've put into it to master that craft, you are now a master butterfly. If there was a level, like, I'd give you the black belt, you know. So we need your knowledge, my friend. It's just too high level. And so often, like you said, we get caught up in how much volume did you do? Like, to me, it's like we're so far off base. We need more master level black belt butterfly coaches, teachers like you who are out there in the world actually teaching how to do this correctly, how to think about it correctly, how to apply it correctly, not just how much yardage did you do. There's just not enough high level coaches out there like you, I think, right now. And so the fact that you're on social media and that you're teaching people your methods, I watched one of your videos yesterday where you were talking about dolphin kick, and I was intrigued. Like, I learn from you, or things that are reinforced by somebody that is a master like you. So, man, just keep doing what you're doing. I'm super impressed with it. I really appreciate you doing this today and giving us a master level on butterfly here today as well, you know.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you having me on. That is just something that I have learned over my career. I've always been very intrigued in technique, how to execute technique. And I've had tons and tons of really good mentors help me out with it. I remember when one of my biggest meets where I had a world championship qualifier, Milorad Savic, who was one of my idols growing up. I saw him for the first time at a Setacoli meet in Rome, where I was too nervous to ask him for an autograph. And I remember he would come up to me and teach me his technique, talking about that flatter technique. So it's just important to stay curious, wanting to learn, yeah, or have that sponge-like mentality where you actually want to improve. But again, I really enjoy talking about technique. It's something I've always been fascinated by. Again, we have to work hard, but it's not always hard. It's smarter, not, you know, sometimes it's smarter, not just always harder. But yeah, I do enjoy giving that out. I do enjoy the coaching aspect, and we always learn and grow.
Good. Where can people find you on social media?
You just type in my name, Marius Kusch. All my socials are listed there. I have a couple of things that I'm working on right now, so in terms of technique and just general work. So if you follow me there, you'll be updated.
I love it, man. Good stuff. Keep changing the world. I appreciate your time today, okay?
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care, man.
Bye.